Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. A little over an hour from now, Evan Washburn will join us. He'll be handling some sideline duties in the ice age known as Sunday night at Kansas City's Arrowhead Stadium for the NFL on CBS. We'll talk to Evan coming up here in a little over an hour from now. This hour, DeMarcus Cousins says that the Warriors are the most hated team in sports right now. We'll ask the bigger question, will Boogie's addition make them the most unstoppable team in sports? And also later on in the hour, Kyrie Irving admits that he has called LeBron James basically to apologize for being a pipsqueak and not wanting the leadership or not realizing what leadership looks like, and now suddenly he's doing it and had to call LeBron to own up and fess up and ask for advice. Classic Kyrie. We will discuss whether Kyrie's teammates can really take him seriously at this point in time. But I want to talk about college football, quote-unquote, free agency. Jalen Hurts, who's won a championship for Alabama, played in multiple championship games, needed to be relieved by Tua Tagovailoa last year in the national championship game to get past Georgia, that also was splitting time this year, although limited, and ultimately had to come in to save the day in the SEC championship game against the Bulldogs, is now going to transfer and head to Oklahoma. Good opportunity, right? Baker Mayfield transfers there, wins a Heisman. Kyler Murray's there, wins a Heisman, transfers in. Jalen Hurts now transferring there. With that offense and Lincoln Riley and that league, Jalen Hurts might put up mind-boggling offensive numbers. You could understand, great opportunity. It's helped launch quarterbacks into the NFL, and it's also been a big-time stepping stone for winning major trophies and hardware like the Heisman and getting to a college football playoff and winning the conference. So, understandably so. Justin Fields is transferring from Georgia to Ohio State. Same type of situation. He is caught behind Jake Fromm. He was unhappy with the way Kirby Smart of the offense utilized him. He was one of the highest touted recruits in the nation when he came into Georgia. He wants out. He wants to be a starter. And Dwayne Haskins is leaving Ohio State. So, Justin Fields joining one of the more powerful teams in the Big Ten and nationally, and an offense that put up major numbers. So potentially a launching pad for a Heisman candidacy, winning the Big Ten, going to a college football playoff, etc. Brandon Wimbush leaving Notre Dame, caught behind Ian Book. Brian Kelly made that change midway through the season. In season, wanted bigger playmaking out of Book. He got that, went undefeated, went to the college football playoff. Wimbush being caught behind Book says, I'm going to transfer. I'm going to UCF because Mackenzie Milton is injured, suffered that injury to his knee at the end of the season, probably will not play, may redshirt this upcoming season. That means Wimbush would be the starter. UCF, top 10 team. Winning a conference, playing in a New Year's Six bowl game, and getting national notoriety and attention. All of these guys have something in common. They are leaving what they feel is lack of opportunity for better opportunity. Playing time opportunity, accolades opportunity, and potential for the pros opportunity, which means earning power. And yet, as you might imagine, this is not breaking any stories here, college football coaches are lamenting the new culture of free agency. And fans and media might also be lamenting this free agency around college football. And I'll give you the defense of why college coaches feel this way. Because they're spending time and effort trying to woo and win over high school recruits for years. I mean, we just saw Jim Harbaugh, as dopey as it is, offer a seventh grader the other day. So they are investing in time and money. It takes money to travel all these places. It takes your recruiting budget to send your assistant coaches or you on the road, fly here, fly there, stay in hotels, per diem, etc. It takes money to go recruit. And you're spending time. Because if you get that kid and you're spending time on that kid, you can't spend that time on another kid. So if you invested all of this time and money into these kids, they then say yes. You've won the recruiting battle. They are then inside your walls. They're part of your program. And then they are saying, well, I don't like it here, so I'm going somewhere else. And so you have now invested all this time and this money, and you lose them anyway. And so coaches hate this. Because what Nick Saban will tell you is, well, how am I supposed to coach a kid knowing that if they don't like me, if I'm too hard on them, they're going to leave for somewhere else. And I think it's interesting to note, Dabo Swinney doesn't complain about stuff like this. Nick Saban does. Nick Saban constantly worries and laments and complains about the way it used to be. Don't expand the playoff. Don't water down the bowl system. Don't allow free agency. And why? Because Nick Saban is cut from old school cloth. It's the same way Coach K used to kvetch and complain about John Calipari's one and done. You're not really getting an education. That's not what college basketball is all about. Blah, blah, blah. Where's my cheese? Cheese, cheese, cheese. And what ends up happening? What ends up happening is those coaches, Coach K and Nick Saban, because they're really good at what they do, they assimilate and absorb and evolve into doing what they hate, right? So suddenly Coach K starts going one and done. He's so one and done, he has built the Uber Kentucky this year so that all of his superstar freshmen, led by Zion and Cam Reddish, are going to leave. He has built the better Kentucky. And Nick Saban worries about this because he's old school. Dabo doesn't because he's new school. Dabo doesn't worry about guys transferring, although I will say, this year with Kelly Bryant, Dabo did try to get him to stay, but note how it was done. Dabo trying to get Kelly Bryant to stay when he went to Trevor Lawrence was more about, hey, we can be great for you. Hey, you can be great here. Hey, the story is not over. Ultimately, Kelly Bryant wanted to leave. Nick Saban's way was, don't turn your back on the team. You can't do that. You're being selfish. You're being too selfish. I think there's a fear amongst the old school coaches or those that are not as entrenched with the new school way of thinking of things, and the fear that, oh my God, the players suddenly are getting more control. And I've always had all the control. I mean, Nick Saban has built his career on having all of the control. And suddenly if Jalen Hurts wants to leave because he doesn't have the same opportunity and can because the rules have become more lackadaisical, now he loses some of that control. And here is the most important point. The coaches have created this culture. Nick Saban has left Michigan State for LSU. Nick Saban has left the MAC for Michigan State. And nobody said, oh, my gosh, you can't leave the MAC for Michigan State. You've got to stay there. Don't turn your back on the program. No. It is, well, that's a much bigger program and a much bigger conference and much more money, and obviously you should be able to go. He leaves Michigan State for LSU. Why? Bigger conference, arguably. Bigger job. More money. He then leaves LSU for Miami and the Dolphins. Why? Well, that's the NFL. It's a bigger league. More money. He goes back and leaves the Dolphins to go to college football. Why? Well, it's the Alabama job. I mean, obviously, it's the Alabama job. All of these steps along the way, Nick Saban has made a choice for Nick Saban. He did not make a choice for the Miami Dolphins. He did not make a choice for the Michigan State Spartans or the LSU Tigers. He made a choice for Nick Saban. What was good for Nick Saban? Like all of these coaches. All of these coaches. What coach do you hear go, I had a chance to really increase my pay and to go to a bigger conference and maybe win a national championship, but I'm staying here because I'm just, it's better for the program. Never. We'd look at him crooked-eyed if he said that. And every coach is now leveraging their latest bowl win into more money. Oh, well, you won the Sugar Bowl. Well, you know, I think you should pay up. Hey, we finished with the top 10. I think you should renegotiate the contract. Oh, did you hear? That school is on to me. I could have taken that job. I think I deserve more money. And I think in the meantime, you should probably build a bigger practice facility, and you should up the recruiting budget, and I should have more money for my assistant coaches. Every step of the way, these coaches leverage themselves and their success for more money and a better opportunity. Every step of the way. And then suddenly they watch the players do it, and we can't have free agency. There's got to be laws. There's got to be rules. You can't transfer inside the conference. You got to sit out a full year. There's got to be a list of schools I tell you you can't go to. I mean, you can't just leave because you're not happy here. You can't just leave because you're not getting playing time here. You can't just leave because you don't like me as a coach here. That's exactly what coaches do. They don't like the AD. They don't like the weather. They don't like the practice facility. They don't like their coaching budget. There's a million reasons they leave. It has empowered players. And frankly, it's the right thing to do. Because if coaches are going to be allowed to set that standard, players should be allowed to follow said standard. Yes, these are grown adults making decisions versus college kids. But if you play it like that, you are basically saying adults are better served making decisions than college kids. And I've seen a lot of grown adults make a lot of bad decisions. I'm sorry, I'm not buying that one. You're only 20. You couldn't possibly know what's good for you. You're 42. You definitely know what's good for you. Uh-uh. I've seen it work both ways. I've seen college kids make really smart decisions versus adults make really boneheaded decisions. I'm not buying that. Sorry, coaches, if you weren't jumping at every new opportunity, maybe you'd have some credibility. But for now, you don't. College kids, you do you. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, DeMarcus Cousins says the Warriors are the most hated team in sports, but now are they the most unstoppable once they get Boogie? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
It's nice to be loved, for sure. It's nice to have a nice little niche that hopefully can develop into something, who knows, somewhere else, on some other platform. I mean, you know, I don't want to be, you know, Jeremy Lin with the Knicks. I don't want to, you know, just excel in that system. You know, I want to go somewhere else, you know, and obviously, you know, spread my wings. I don't want to just be, pigeonholed into the huge freeze phenomenon.
Download the PGP today on iTunes and play.it or listen at DAOnCBS.com and the show's Facebook page, Zap Zap.
That's this week's Permission Granted podcast. I have a sit-down with Huge Freeze in advance of next week's jersey retirement ceremony. We will raise his 4XL jersey to the rafters and retire him forever. Huge Freeze losing the Battle of the Bulge, and so thus he is banished for life. He goes up to the rafters with the other official retirees, Richard Justice, MLB.com, Joey Chestnut, food eater extraordinaire, and Bobby Valentine, former disgraced Major League Baseball manager. Those are the four names, faces, and numbers retired to the jersey rafters, to the rafters here on the DA show. However,
DA, I don't know why they don't like Huge Freeze.
However, I do want to remind everybody, Huge is the only one retired in good standing. The other three were banished like Shoeless Joe Jackson to the Black Sox. Huge Freeze, the only guy that retires in good standing with the show. So we'll have his jersey retirement ceremony coming up here on Thursday. And this week's PGP involves me talking to Huge about what emotions might be going through his head. I talked to Huge Freeze, and you heard him there say, I don't want to be Jeremy Lin. I don't want to be a flash in the pan. I don't want just Linsanity. I want to prove I can work in another system. I don't want to just be the Huge Freeze phenomenon. I want to be something more. He wants to be a full-time point guard. In this case, probably a little hefty for a point guard, but you understand the metaphor here. And this is what I really appreciate about Robbie. This is how I think is going to end up being slightly lost because he's such a larger-than-life figure and such a great songbird with a wonderful voice and musical chops. What I think might be lost is he really grew up. That through the Battle of the Bulge, he really found himself. He matured. And I think before it started, back in August when I pitched this, September when we started this, I think Robbie might still have been a little bit about me. And now it was a bigger picture. How can I be better about we? How can I help shows? How can I develop my career? How can I be trustworthy? How can I show work ethic? And what I think this showed Robbie was there is a spark there. There's a jewel. There's a diamond lumped into that coal. And it's just going to take a very special situation and his work ethic to try to get it out. But there is a diamond in there. And I think hearing him say, I want to do more. I want to be more. I don't want to just be the Huge Freeze phenomenon. I want to go someplace and really show that I'm not a system guy. I can play in multiple systems. I think shows you where he's turning the corner from a professionalism standpoint.
I am the adult contemporary Huge Freeze.
You know, Pete, you are now in management. You're a member of CBS Sports Radio Administration. You're a decision maker now. You are developing schedules. You are looking at who's dependable. Did you feel like by the end of the Battle of the Bulge, Robbie had turned a corner in your mind?
I'll say this. I don't think he hurt himself.
Did he help himself?
Maybe.
Okay, maybe a slight win.
Yes, but he didn't go over the top. But he has progressed either a little bit forward or stayed neutral.
Mraz, when I mentioned that I think he had grown up over the Battle of the Bulge, you seem to nod your head in agreement.
Yeah, I think the first 4 minutes of your little preamble there was a little, using the word great freely, but I thought when you brought up the point that he grew up, that was actually a very smart point, and I think if you put it that way, you're right. However, point counterpoint, the man's 36 years old. Maybe the growing up should have happened 10 years ago.
Well, maybe. But
he grew wide, he just didn't grow up.
We saw growth. I'll say that. We saw maturation and emotional and mental growth.
And listen, as you just pointed out, as far as him being a diamond, the great Kanye West once said, diamonds are forever. So if that is the case, Robbie has a forever.
Ooh, ooh.
This week's PGP available on iTunes and also everywhere else that podcasts are downloaded, and on our website, daoncbs.com. 1 week from today, the Huge Freeze jersey retirement ceremony. We're going to dust off some major celebrities for this. Some major, major celebs.
Dust off.
Dust off.
Getting Lindsay Lohan off that beach club?
DeMarcus Cousins tells Rachel Nichols that as he begins to get ready to suit up for the Golden State Warriors, his long-awaited debut, they are the, quote, most hated team in sports. Although then Cousins says, I don't really pay attention to storylines. I mean, they're going to say what they're going to have to say. They're going to add their opinions. We're the most hated team in sports. I kind of love that. We're the most hated team, but I don't pay attention to who likes who or who hates who. You know, all these guys pay attention because social media, they are addicted to it, and you cannot avoid. I don't know if you're like me. Sometimes I just go, you know, I don't want to see what's going on social media right now. I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm going to just put the phone away. I'm going to log off the laptop. I don't need to know what everybody's saying right now because I know it's bad. These guys know because they're addicted to it. It's of their culture, of their generation.
Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Twitter.
Are they more hated than the Yankees? Probably because they're winning and the Yankees aren't. Yankees aren't winning titles, at least. Are they more hated than the Dallas Cowboys? Probably a little easier to make fun of the Dallas Cowboys because they always seem to stub their toe. Jerry Jones says stupid things. They always seem to lose the big game. Are they more hated than the New England Patriots? I don't know about that. I think the Patriots might be most hated simply because there's such an exhaustion of the Patriots and they're there every single year and there's been scandal on top of it. And so I think that, you know, think about it this way. We are in year number 5 of the Warriors' run. Imagine doing these 5 years another 2 times. Imagine this is 15 years of the Warriors. Then we are at where the Patriots are at right now. But more importantly, who cares who's the most hated? That's subjective. What's more important is, are they going to be the most unstoppable? The Warriors are finally rounding into form. The Warriors just had a 51-point first quarter the other night. The Warriors now have Klay Thompson out of his shooting slump. It looks like at least they're seemingly past the Draymond versus Kevin Durant thing, even if KD is probably going to leave after the season. Maybe Klay does as well. My guess is KD leaves and Klay stays. That's my guess. But look, if the Warriors are going to do this without Boogie, and then they get a healthy DeMarcus Cousins, they become, once again, scary. The cool part about this NBA season has been they don't look scary. They don't look unbeatable. They don't look immortal. They look mortal, and that means other teams can step up and fill the void. It's not very fun to watch the Thunder or the Rockets or even the Raptors or the Bucks of the East if the Warriors are winning 70 games. That doesn't feel very fun. But if the Warriors are a 2 seed or the Warriors are a vulnerable 1 seed, then suddenly, okay, there's a reason to be locked in. If DeMarcus Cousins comes back fully healthy and he's able to assimilate into what they do, not them assimilating to what he does, they're going to be filthy again. Because DeMarcus Cousins is going to end up shoring up the only thing that they seemingly have a weakness in, and that is on the boards, defensive presence on the glass, and altering shots defensively. They just don't have that type of big man to grab those types of rebounds, to work in the post, and to block shots. They just don't have anybody of the caliber of DeMarcus, and they have not had anybody of the caliber of DeMarcus during this run at center. They've had serviceable centers. They have not had anybody at that level. If you have all of these guys shooting the way that they can shoot, and then you add Cousins, who has been amazing, he's not going to be at an all-star level because he won't be asked to carry much of the offensive load. But if he adds rebounding and defensive shot blocking and some presence underneath, yeah, yes, suddenly they once again become the Death Star. So I think it's been nice the first half of the season and beyond to see an NBA that feels more wide open. I got to tell you, I've got a sinking feeling once DeMarcus comes back, and Steve Kerr's a pretty good coach, they'll have him assimilated well, and they're going to end up becoming the unbeatable Death Star again. And that's not going to be very fun. When we come back here on the DA Show, speaking of hoops, Kyrie Irving admits that he has reached out to LeBron and apologized. We'll discuss coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This year like last year, the best is right here on CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Happy Throwback Thursday to you, everybody. And football's about to get funner with Skittles, Snickers, and M&M's brands. The official sponsors of Super Bowl 53. Pump up your party all postseason long. Our Super Bowl party begins coming up the week of the Super Bowl when we'll be in Atlanta. We'll do all five shows Monday through Friday all week long from Radio Row in Atlanta, site of Super Bowl 53. That's three stripes to you, Merez. Only on CBS, of course. So we'll be down there for all five shows, and from what I'm gathering, got a lot of great guests already booked. That is the sure sign the DA Show has arrived, in that we've got people reaching out to us 2 to 3 weeks beforehand saying, we need our guest, we need our player, we need our celebrity on your show. How can we get a slot? And Merez, I got to say, this has been a turning point for your career because this means you finally get to do even less work people booking their guests on their own.
Now, while that is 100% true, and I love it, I will say, though, don't sell me short. When you're on Radio Row and guests are running late and you're interviewing with other guests, there is where I come into play and it becomes very stressful for me. Or you're asking one question too much. I'm trying to give you the Laszlo sign. So while you're trying to poo-poo the work I do at Radio Row, there is a necessity to it. I'm such a crap producer.
There is absolutely a necessity to having you on Radio Row. I totally agree. I'm just saying, there once was a time in DA Show history where you had to hustle for guests. It was, overnight? We're on overnight. We have to tape this because you're not going to be up when it actually airs. You haven't heard of us. This is what we do. Now, 6 years later, you've just got PR people banging down your door saying, we got to get our client on your show.
And you don't come at me with a taping. If you can't make it from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern, take a hike, sister. Right?
That's right. We're live only.
We're live, baby. That's it.
Now, that being said,
at the moment, nothing booked on Tuesday. I'm a little concerned.
But Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we're good.
Monday and Tuesday.
We're already booked.
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, you know, I don't know. We'll hopefully sound checks put together.
The words of a confident producer, Pete.
Hopefully sound check is put together.
Monday, Tuesday, I don't know.
Yes. Get that big Pro Bowl cold open on Monday.
That's the focus that I'm looking for here from the show.
No tape guests.
Can I say something really quickly, by the way?
Yes, please.
Have you ever seen a picture of Betty White when she's younger?
Yes.
What a doll.
Doll.
I'm in love.
Why did we get to Betty White?
Because this just came across my timeline, and I figured I would forget to talk about it with you in break. What a beautiful woman.
It came across your timeline because this was the date that you trashed her?
Well, it must be. Today's her 97th birthday, and her at 27? Oh, I tell you, a single Uncle Shawnee. I think he's, you know, asking her to go to Applebee's. Big pop on the loose. What a beautiful woman.
My guess is there were no Applebee's 70 years ago.
They're a neighborhood bar and grill. It might have been.
Producer,
yes,
right there.
She was very pretty. She was very, very pretty.
I'm
still
stunned.
And she's adorable now. I mean, I love Betty White.
Yeah, I know that's off kilter, but yeah, beautiful.
Beautiful. So we're going to get to this Kyrie Irving audio because last night he finally admitted that he apologized to LeBron James. But first, I want to talk a little bit about baseball's free agency here. Because have you seen the reported offer Manny Machado got from the Chicago White Sox? Machado is 26 years old. Machado is a perennial all-star. Machado, when focused and healthy and engaged, is one of the best all-around players in the game. And again, he's in his physical prime. And he reportedly was offered $175 million over 7 years by the White Sox, and it hasn't been topped yet. Just for some type of context here, coming into this offseason, we were expecting Manny Machado and Bryce Harper to have $300 million offers. Remember, Giancarlo Stanton got $325 million from the Marlins. And he was nowhere the two-way player that Machado is. Hit more home runs, bigger power hitter, but certainly was not in the category of great two-way players like Machado. So we have now cut in half almost the earning power of a free agent, top-tier, A-list free agent in his prime. My guess is that will not be the best offer Machado gets. And my guess is Bryce Harper will inch closer to 300 mil. But the fact is this. This market for Machado and Harper is lukewarm. I mean, I would say it's cold. You know when you heat up tea in the microwave and you take it out and it's like hot a little bit, but then really it's not that hot and it gets real cold real quick? That's what this market is for Machado and Harper. It's like kind of hot. Nah, it's not really. It's kind of cold. And I can't believe it. I mean, because revenues are going up every year in baseball, and these two guys are cornerstone guys. I understand neither one is without some headache. Machado admitting that he only hustles when he wants to. Bryce Harper being kind of a diva. Neither one has won big. Neither one has led a team to a World Series single-handedly. But, I mean, there was a time not too long ago that Machado and Harper would have already had dueling $300 million offers that they'd be bouncing back and forth on. And it is amazing that with revenue higher than ever before, television contracts richer than ever before, and these two guys in their mid-20s hitting free agency, that they're not getting massive deals. I mean, let's face it. Once upon a time, the Chicago White Sox, because they have been afterthoughts, they have been bad, they have been the dregs of the American League Central, would have to overpay for Machado, and so they would have to offer $325 or something stupid where you're like, oh my God, the White Sox went to that level? They offered $375 for Machado? They're at $175. They're not even worried if they piss him off. They're not even worried if they upset him. They're not even worried if Scott Boras laughs in their face. They're like, well, nobody else has given him an offer, so we'll start here. We'll start the bidding here. This is extraordinary. And you can't convince me that this is not collusion. I don't know how you could possibly prove that, because Major League Baseball owners would never send around a memo or have any type of actual physical evidence that would say don't spend money on these guys. But there's this kind of perfect confluence of events. Number one, owners have seen you don't have to spend money to win World Series. You don't have to. The Houston Astros have provided you the blueprint. The Kansas City Royals provided the blueprint. If you're good enough in your farm system, and you have to be really, really good, and you get your farm system to hit at the same exact time, all of your stars come up at the same time, you can win a World Series on a middle-of-the-road budget, a middle-of-the-league salary budget. Number two, it has become a young man's game. And so because velocity is the biggest thing ever, velocity, 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 you're no longer spending crazy amounts of money on aging starting pitchers. So there's no more $25 to $30 million a year salaries going out to 35-year-old pitchers. They're younger. We need velocity. We would rather have somebody at 22 throwing 100 than a guy at 32 throwing 87. Number three, no steroids. No PEDs, no steroids means there is no hulking sluggers extending their careers into their late 30s. Can't trust them. I mean, look at Nelson Cruz, nobody trusts. if you are in your 30s and you're hitting home runs, nobody trusts that it's legit. And there's just less guys doing it, far less. So now we have this really crazy intersection of going younger, we can go cheap and still win, we don't trust old guys, and that's when you make all your money, old guys. So when you're in your, when it used to be when you were an old guy. So now it's all arbitration. Yeah, we'll pay you arbitration. Go to arbitration, sure. We'll badmouth you, and we'll just see what the judge says, and we'll just pay you how much the judge says. I mean, because think about the Mets and Jacob DeGrom this year. He comes off a Cy Young award-winning campaign, and he gets $17 million. Well, that's a bargain at his age, $17 million, because hypothetically in free agency, you could go out and get $30 million a year. But he can't be a free agent. He's still under team control, gets arbitration. And we're just not in an era where these owners want to spend that type of cash. I just think this is remarkable. And if you are a free agent, could you imagine being Bryce Harper and 4 years ago, 3 years ago, being, I'm going to cash in. Manny Machado, I'm going to cash in. I'm going to be making, you see what Giancarlo just made? I'm making that plus some. And then hitting the offseason, and it's mid-January. We're going to report to spring training, pitchers and catchers, in less than a month. And these guys don't have significant offers? These guys don't have dueling huge offers? It is crazy that these guys have not signed yet and don't have more than 175 over 7 years? Wow. Our toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. So the Boston Celtics have gone through a lot of ups and downs over the last couple of weeks, and really the first half of the season. And Kyrie Irving has called out some of the younger players of the team for not holding up their end of the bargain. And he has been publicly critical and seemingly upset at the coach as well for calling plays for the young guys at the end of games. And Kyrie Irving, who has never met a microphone he didn't like, who has espoused flat earth theories, who has always felt like he was the smartest guy in the room, even though he's really not, of course couldn't help but go into a long diatribe about how he now has reached out to LeBron to apologize and for advice.
I did a poor job of setting an example for these young guys of what it's like to get something out of your teammates. And, you know, you go and you say something publicly and it ends up being, received in so many different ways. And, you know, you never know how fragile or what guys are going through. And you say things like that and you're expecting results. But at the same time, I should have kept it in-house. So, going forward, I want to test these young guys, but not publicly like that. And I want to get the best out of them, but I can't do it publicly like that. And I got to empower them. You know, JB was right. I gotta do the right things and really not point fingers at individuals and really realize what we can do as a group. I'll tell you one thing, and obviously this is something that it was a big deal for me because I had to call Bron, you know, and tell him, like, you know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his, you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to the championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that, and, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people, and Bron was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship, and it was hard for him, and sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world. And like I said, only few are meant for it or chosen for it. And, you know, I feel like the best person to call was him because, you know, he's been in the situation. You know, he's been there with me where I've been the young guy of, you know, being a 22-year-old kid and, you know, wanting everything. Wanting everything right now, you know, coming off an all-star year starting. And then, you know, this heck of a presence comes back. And now I got to adjust my game to this guy. And, you know, you take it personal, but at the end of the day, he just wants what's best. And he has a legacy he wants to leave, and he has a window he wants to capture. So I think what that brought me back to is, like, all right, how do I get the best out of this group of the success they had last year? And then helping them realize what it takes to win a championship.
I think there's so much interesting stuff there for Kyrie. I mean, on the one hand, you go, well, at least you've grown up a little bit. At least you've understood that LeBron had a point. At least you're kind of trying to start to mature and see the bigger picture here. And you want to be a bigger man, fine. But at the same time, Kyrie Irving is trying to take credit for not taking credit. I mean, the extent of that, of those quotes were basically, you know, sometimes, you know, you gotta realize, you know, takes a bigger man. You know, that's your responsibility. Trying to be a leader. You know, so it's you gotta understand more. You gotta be a better mature adult. And it's like, I just want to remind everybody, I'm now better than I was. I was what, 2 days ago? I mean, 2 days ago, you're trashing your younger players. And now suddenly you want a pat on the back because, you know, I've grown up quite a bit. I even reached out to LeBron and apologized. Also, LeBron was the guy that bristled Kyrie Irving because he would make public comments. And then Kyrie, having hated that, turned around and did it here to the Celtics. And on top of it, Kyrie Irving is going to act as though he understands this grand big picture. If he understood it, why did he shoot his way out of Cleveland with a chance to win a championship last year? Imagine the Cavaliers last season. They got to the NBA Finals without Kyrie. And so suddenly now you've had a come-to-Jesus moment just because this week you got in trouble. This week the young players bristled at you. I mean, the thing with Kyrie is he thinks he's so smart, and ultimately, he just keeps making it about himself.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.